Welcome back to From the Press Box, the Holland Sentinel Sports Staff's weekly podcast where we talk anything and everything sports. I'm sports editor Dan Diodana alongside our assistant sports editor Will Kennedy. Will, we've got a lot of things happen this week on the national stage and the local stage. Obviously it was Super Bowl week and one of the better Super Bowls, but we also had, some Hope Calvin basketball action and a lot of high school stuff going on too. So I want to start with the Hope Calvin. It was last night as of this recording. Huge, huge game on the men's side. Everything was on the line. Both teams were tied for first place with only one game to go. Winner clinched at least a share. And that was the game lived up to the hype. It was back and forth pretty much the entire game. 91 to 83 or something like that. I mean, like that was 93 to 80, whatever it was. It was a lot of points, just an awful lot of points after watching how Hope has won most of their games with their defense. It was really interesting to see this track meet style basketball game. And it wasn't a lot of transition either because there were a lot of made shots. There weren't a ton of rebounds and there weren't very many turnovers. So it was just get it, go, score, get it, go, score, get it, go, score. It's been a while since I've seen a game quite like that, but it was nice to see that be the game that meant so much to the league, having that rivalry be there. I mean, the last 4 years, that rivalry has not decided who has won the MIAA championship, but before 4 years ago, that game, the last game of the year between those two teams, had decided it, I think, like 11 years in a row. So it's a big, big deal in the rivalry when it's obviously for first place. But, they Hope won and clinched the share of the title, MIAA title. But since they beat Calvin twice, they also win the tiebreaker. Should they, in fact, even if they lost Saturday and shared the title with Calvin, they'd still get to host the MIAA tournament based on the rules for the postseason. So Hope will be hosting the men's tournament all the way through as far as they go in it, of course. So just a really, really big game in a lot of ways. Obviously, it's a rivalry game. It was huge. There were not any empty seats in DeVos Fieldhouse. That's the first time that's happened in quite some time with the pandemic. So that was very exciting to see and feel that energy in the rivalry game again. At Hope. I mean, we had that at Calvin earlier. Obviously Evan Thomas had another great game. Joshua Lilja had the big three that bounced in and out and back in that kind of sparked the decisive run. They made the defensive plays down the stretch when they had to, and the energy was just there. It was just something it was almost a vibe. I mean, I know they set like the DeVos Fieldhouse record shooting like 60-some percent, which is ridiculous because this is a team, as we talked to Will earlier about, that they just, sometimes shoot in the 30s a lot of times, and if their threes weren't falling, they were losing. And that's what has been happened to them the last couple of years, and they're figuring things out. But this energy, I have not seen energy like this from this team in a couple of years. And that was really exciting to see. If they keep that going, they might be able to make a little run in the NCAA tournament too. So assuming they went out in the MIAA tournament, not sure if two people from the MIAA are going to get, or two teams will get in. Both Hope and Calvin, have decent records, but I would feel like if Hope wins out, Calvin would be, let's see, now there's 17, 18, they'd be like 21-8. And I just don't think that's going to get in.
Yeah.
So I think it's really all comes down to the tournament. So, but having the home court, and they proved what they can do in the home court, so that'll be, quite the big deal. But it was definitely cool to see the rivalry game live up to it the same way. I mean, it's always exciting and energetic. But the last couple of times, Hope has won, you pulled away at the end of the first half or the beginning of the second half, and then just kind of the game was never in doubt. This game was in doubt pretty much the entire time until about a minute and a half to go. So yeah. There were 15 ties and 19 lead changes.
Yeah.
Or 19 ties and 15 lead changes, one or the other.
Yeah, that's
but I that's a ton.
The second half. Yeah, I watched the second half of it, and that sounds about right.
Yeah, I mean that's what you want out of a rivalry game. You want a back and forth game. It was just such a weird game as a reporter as well, because like I didn't start writing until the middle of the second half. Usually, you kind of write along as things happen, but it was back and forth so fast with all the points and no one getting more than like a 3-point lead for quite a long time. I just didn't. I mean, I summed up the first half in about 2 paragraphs at halftime. And then by the time I finished the game story, I deleted the first half play by play anyway, because no, it didn't matter. So it was just really, really strange to, you know, I didn't really have many notes to take because it was just back and forth. I felt like I was watching really fast tennis.
Yeah.
But it was exciting.
Yeah, I've even though I'm a young reporter, I've been out of college for what, like 2 years now, and been a professional reporter for about a year and a half or so. I've learned my lesson the hard way not to ever write a single word until the game's over, man. I've learned my lesson the hard way. There's no way I'm doing that ever again. I've had to delete entire 600 word stories before when all I needed to add in was quotes because of a crazy ninth inning or something. So,
yep. Yeah.
If there are any future or hopeful future journalists out there, just, you know, don't do that. You might think it's easy. You might want to get home and earlier. It's not worth it. It's just going
to
be.
Right. Well, it's just a matter for the most part. I used to do that all the time. And now I pick and choose when I do it. It's a matter of what do you need to remember?
Yeah.
You know, right. I've had plenty of those happen where you have it all set. And then the bottom falls out. It really happened to me a couple times when I was covering Tiger playoff games.
It's mainly baseball where that happens the worst, because anything right. can happen like the bottom of the ninth.
Well, there's no clock, so you can't even use that as your ally as a reporter. So it's just, baseball, you can mark little notes about what happens here or there, but you can't really write a good narrative until it's over. You just can't start with that. I'm pretty sure there was one playoff game where I wrote the story 4 times.
I mean, that's not surprising. That's what happened.
Yeah. So, I mean, that means it was an exciting game.
Yeah.
Those are the kind of things that you got to deal with. Occupational hazards for journalists.
Fortunately for me, as the guy who's like kind of the whole women's beat writer, all the games are over by halftime for the most part. So I can, and I never write like a game story. Like I very rarely will write about what happened in the game because they always win by so much. I'll always just turn it into a feature on one of the
players. And no one wants to read that. They are so good that they won by 40 points. Yeah, and here's how. Just, yeah, we all know that.
They played really poorly last night and won by 30.
Right.
So that sort of tells you what kind of a team they are. But I'll rarely write a game story, but getting back to the Hope women, they won last night, played a really ugly first quarter against the Adrian team that isn't all that good. I think they're ranked seventh, I guess, in the conference under St. Mary's, above Kalamazoo, I should say. They are not very good, and they held them. It was 12-17 at the end of the first quarter. And I was like, what's going on here? I was just watching from home because it was at Adrian. And I was like, what the heck's going on here? And then in the second quarter, they were like, we should actually start playing basketball again. And then they were up by 20 at halftime. And I think it got to 40 at one point. And then they put in the third unit for the whole fourth quarter and only scored 12 points, but still won by 30. Final three quarters were very much Hope College basketball, women's basketball. First quarter was like, this could get iffy here. But then they turned it around real quick. Kennedy Springfield, I think, had 20 points, was like the first time she had 20 points. No, I'm sorry, she had 16, but still, normally women on that team don't make it up past 15 very frequently because it just
right because everybody scores 9 or 10.
Yeah,
yeah, for sure. Can you imagine? Well, when I was covering the Hope women back a few years ago, we still were in the mode of traveling, so I would drive to Adrian, like 3 hours to Adrian, to watch a massacre. Drive back.
That's awful. I mean, I geographically, I don't even know where Adrian is, to be quite honest with you. I'm still a relatively new Michigander. but yeah, no, that sounds miserable, especially now, because who knows when you could drive there and it'll be great. And then you come out and it'll be a whiteout and you got to drive all that way home in a whiteout. And that's not my kind of thing.
Right.
Do that.
Yeah. It's fun.
Yeah.
So Adrian's close to the Ohio border, but way like past Jackson, way on the east side. It's like south of Ann Arbor.
Okay, so I'm glad I did not go there.
Yeah, it's a hike. Yeah,
glad the streams exist, and that game was low enough priority that I didn't have to
Go there. Right. Well, the game,
the outcome before it started.
Exactly. So it's nice to have that benefit of the doubt sometimes. So
I can watch the second half of the men's game while I was watching the women's game finish up, because the men's game started late. The women's game started way earlier. By the time that ended, I watched the second half of the men's game, and I was pretty exciting because I'm covering the men's game on Saturday for senior day, because you will be at the MIAA swimming meet. So I got to familiarize myself with the men's team a little bit, because like I said, I don't cover them a ton. I'm more on the women's side, but should be fun. They were fun.
It should, and the women should clinch on Saturday also a share.
Yes, but they will not get home court.
But they will not get home court. Trine will. That's only for the final, unless Trine loses, right? And that's only for the final. So the Hope women will have home games in the first round in the semifinals.
Yeah, and it'll probably set up a rematch with Adrian in the first round at DeVos on what, Tuesday it would be? Or
it would be Wednesday for the women. Yep, yeah. The men's game is Tuesday. It'll be an interesting situation to see what happens. We'll see if a Hope Calvin, it could be a Hope Calvin, then Hope Trine on the women's side.
Could be.
And it also could be.
It could be Hope Adrian.
It could be a Hope.
Albion. I'm sorry.
Right. It could be Albion, right? It could be a. That's right.
It'll probably be Hope Albion.
Hope Albion and then Trine Calvin in the semis. Yeah,
most likely.
Right. If everything goes on paper.
If everything continues in the way
it right, and how Saturday's games happen and everything. Yeah. And then the men, it's the Hope Calvin could be the finals again, because they'll be the top two seeds, but Trine and Albion are really good for the men too. So,
yeah. Well, Trine was ranked in the top 10 for a large chunk of the beginning of the season.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see how that unfolds for the men's side, especially.
Speaking of rankings, Hope has moved up from second, or from third to second in the D3 pool. So there's one spot away from that top spot. I believe Trine is five. In that poll, coaches poll, it's very weird and inconsistent, but Hope is still three in the coaches poll or trying.
Right. Well, and it'll all depend on what happens next week. So
that's where they currently stand. It's a spot up from when they last fell to Trine. So they're getting closer to that number one spot.
And that'll be a big deal, because I still think they host the first two rounds, and Trine might also.
Yes.
In the NCAA,
in different brackets.
Right. But if Hope beats Trine, there's a good chance if they went out, they could host an extra weekend.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And
great for us, of course.
That's all done with like regional rankings and stuff. And I don't fully understand how those work, because I looked at them the other day and I don't entirely understand them. But
it's done by regional rankings and geography. And so you could study it your whole life, and you still won't know what's happening.
It won't make a ton of sense. Yeah, the NCAA does what it wants. That's what I've learned.
Right. Yeah, we've had the women had one sectional where they hosted the first two rounds, and then they went to Texas.
Oh God!
For the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight, and it was a Texas school and Hope, and George Fox, who's from Oregon.
Oh geez.
And another school. I can't remember if it was from maybe like Wisconsin Stevens Point or something like that. I don't know. Everyone had to fly, so they put all the teams that would have to fly in the same bracket, basically. So it was just wild. So
it's very bizarre.
A little bit of a different situation. Yeah. So we'll keep you posted on that. But it should be a lot of Hope basketball next week. A lot of stuff on the line. Everything's on the line now. Is from here on out.
Yeah.
There's something on the line. I mean, the Hope men could lose Saturday and still get home court, but they want the title outright. They don't want to share it, especially with Calvin. So there's something on the line all the way through, and that makes for exciting basketball. And next week we got a good rivalry.
The weird thing about the men's side is that obviously we know the women's side, it's probably going to come down to three teams and Calvin, Trine, and Albion, or Hope, Trine, and Albion. Whereas the men's side is like, honestly, five to six teams could realistically win the MIAA tournament.
Right, right. And that's made it very exciting. I mean, it used to be Hope and Calvin, you knew you could pencil them in the final every year. You weren't sure which one was going to win, but you could pencil that in. And you can, it used to be that way for the women too. I'm glad that we've gotten more to the point where you can spread it around a little bit, just for the sake of parody and the unknown a little bit.
Yeah,
makes it more fun. But
yeah, for sure.
Definitely a big week of basketball next week with all those tournaments. Plus we've got the Zealand East-West rivalry, boys and girls, plus the Hamilton Holland Christian rivalry, boys and girls, and West Ottawa Hudsonville and West Ottawa Rockford. So it's and Holland Christian versus Unity Christian. So there's a lot of the rivalries, and Holland Zealand West, actually, they play each other next Friday too. So there's a lot of interesting rivalry matchups too, at the same time that we've got the whole basketball stuff too. So we'll try to bring you as much coverage of everything as possible. It's going to be interesting. The print coverage will definitely be interesting because there's no way, the way our Thursday print, dinky print section is, where we only have like a page and a half, there's no way we're going to have five games and a rewind in there. So we'll have to pick and choose a little bit there. But all the coverage will be on HollandSentinel.com as always. So we're looking forward to that week for sure. So, but now before it gets too stale, Will, we got to talk about the Super Bowl here. I mean, the Rams win the Super Bowl. Matthew Stafford gets a ring. It was one of the better and close Super Bowls I can remember too. Like, it was an entertaining game that was close. You know, a lot of talk was made about the halftime show, and I am in the age bracket that I completely loved it.
That was the best halftime show of my lifetime.
Yeah, it was really good. I know a lot of people don't like rap, or it's not quite their thing or whatever, but you know, I feel the same way about country music. I've seen Garth Brooks and Shania Twain and people like that do things, and they do fine at Super Bowl halftimes or whatever. So, you know, it makes sense to have it, you know, split up a little bit like that. We've had a lot of good ones over the years, but yeah, this one was quite good. But the game was really good. Like, a lot of times when the halftime show is so great, I also feel like I remember it more because the game wasn't as good. But this game was really, really good. And it had a lot. I mean, obviously for Lions fans, you know, there's the mixed bag of bittersweetness of watching Stafford win a Super Bowl. You obviously, you know, I would say most Lions fans are probably happy for him personally, but also, you know, mad at the Lions for getting rid of him in the first place.
He wanted to leave, so.
Yeah, I mean, we got to that point, you know, where they weren't going to, you know, have enough to become a contender while he was still playing, basically.
Yeah, he's the one who requested the trade. And I mean, honestly, good for the – I mean, it worked out well. I mean, I think the Lions got two first-round picks, or a first-round
pick. And Goff, yeah.
And Goff, and then like a third-rounder or whatever.
Yeah.
Stafford got to go win the Super Bowl. So, I mean, it worked out pretty well for both.
I think it worked well for both.
And I think it was pretty commendable that not only did they get a good haul for him, but they put him in a situation where he could win right away, you know?
Right.
Which is pretty great for them. Same thing for Von Miller coming over. The Denver Broncos GM sort of said halfway through the season, he's like, well, Von Miller's getting up there in age. We want to, you know, give him a spot where he can win, because he didn't want to get traded, but they needed picks. And they're like, well, we're going to take less than what we could potentially get just to give Von, who's a Broncos legend, a chance to, you know, go win another Super Bowl.
Right. And there's a lot of storybook sides. That's why I'm kind of glad that the Rams won. I have nothing against the Cincinnati Bengals. I think that there's a better chance of them being back with the younger core that they have.
A very young group, yeah.
So I think that for one is one. But for the Rams, you get the Lions thing with Stafford, which I enjoyed watching Stafford win. That was really cool. But you also had Donald, you know, who's possibly riding into the sunset as the best defensive player of the last few years. And then you've got to
retire, apparently.
What was that?
Sean McVay might retire now, apparently.
Right. Right.
Like, 36. Like, what?
Right. You got the 40-year-old lineman who got to.
Yeah. Whitworth.
Whitworth. That's right. Yeah, who gets to ride into the sunset. Von Miller's, you know, makes his impact over there. Beckham Jr. comes over, although he got hurt, and that played a huge factor in it. I mean, there are so many different little nuggets of storylines, and you get to have two cool players ride into the sunset.
And Cooper Kupp kind of showed the world why he's like the greatest receiver of the year by
right.
That might be one of the best receiving seasons by an individual receiver of NFL history.
Right.
You know, led the league in catches, receiving yards, and touchdowns, and win the Super Bowl MVP with three touchdowns. It's pretty absurd.
Right. I feel like the Venn diagram of that is like him and Jerry Rice.
Yeah. I mean, that might be the single best season by receiver, at least in my lifetime. It definitely is. But yeah, it's pretty wild.
Yeah, for sure. Well, especially since it's gotten so – the game has changed. I mean, even when Jerry Rice was getting those, it wasn't quite – it was still more of a pro-set style offense, a couple of receivers. It wasn't as spread all the time.
Yeah.
It wasn't as pass heavy. But, yeah, it's just – it's really really interesting to see that all come into play all at once for the Rams. So I felt there was no more storylines to root for the Rams.
I assume you were rooting for the Rams, right?
I was rooting for the Rams. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, even if they didn't have, I wouldn't have cared so much, but I really like Donald.
Yeah. He's fantastic.
And he's so great to watch, and just to watch him single-handedly take the last two plays down was pretty cool, especially if that's the way he goes out.
Yeah.
I mean, that's legendary. I mean, like, I can't think of anybody else. I feel like Reggie White had a Super Bowl like that where they won when he was on the Packers and he kind of rode into the sunset and he was like the greatest defensive lineman of all time at that point.
Yeah.
But I don't remember him getting the last two tackles in a close game, you know, like on the third and fourth down to end the game. But
is that Joe Burrow almost completed the pass to Joe Mixon too. He like just flipped it out, and when he was like halfway on the ground and he almost completed it for a first down, which is like
right it was crazy.
Burrow will be. And he was on a sprained MCL when he went, or torn MCL when he did it, which is
right
it just shows that Joe Burrow is going to be good for a really long time,
right? And that's another reason I had no problem. I mean, I haven't openly rooted in a Super Bowl in an awful long time, like, because I don't care who wins for the most part. I don't have much ties to anybody at any point. So, but to have, you know, I like the storylines, you know what I mean? Like I'm pretty sure I was rooting for the Saints when they finally won, you know. I was, you know, you get things like that, you know. But this is different. And again, I think a part of the reason I had no problem whatsoever is that I think the Bengals are going to be around.
Yeah.
I think they're going to be a contender for the next 5 years. I wouldn't be surprised if they played the Chiefs in the AFC Championship game all five of the next years.
Or the Bills.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be that grouping will be, you know.
Yeah. They just need to get an offensive line is what they need to do.
Yeah. That did not work in their favor.
I mean, yeah, but I agree with you. This is the first Super Bowl, like, normally I'll root against the team. Like, I don't particularly like the Patriots. I went to school in Tampa, so Bucks fans became extremely obnoxious once they got Tom Brady. So I was like, all right, I want to root against the Bucks last year. But this year it was very much like, I'll be happy if either team wins. Like, I think that I love Joe Burrow. I think he's awesome. There's a kid I know who plays for the Bengals, a kid I know who plays for the Rams. So I was like happy either way. Though he did not play particularly well in the game, he caused the interception, that one of the interceptions Matthew Stafford threw. It was a low throw. He tipped it up, and then the Bengals DB caught it and almost ran it back for a touchdown. I was like, oh no, Ben, what are you doing?
Right.
But we got it. He ended up getting a ring, so I'm happy for him. But yeah, right. No, I was just happy either way. It was very nice to watch a game and be like, oh, I don't hate either of these teams.
Right. Right. I feel like the other one that I remember being like this, that ended up being decently close and that I was okay with either one, I think it was like a few years ago, the Steelers-Cardinals.
Oh, that was one of the best Super Bowls ever.
Yeah, it was really good. And I think I was rooting. I mean, the Steelers had won a couple, you know. That was another cool one when it was in Detroit, and the Steelers won, and Jerome Bettis is from Detroit. And he, you know, scored. If it wasn't the winning touchdown, he scored.
It was a close game, yeah.
And that was a close game too. And my predecessor, Alan Babbitt, covered that game.
Oh, that's cool.
The one I was kind of rooting for Larry Fitzgerald.
Yeah.
At that point, but it was a really good game.
Yeah. That was one of the best.
That's one of the ones that sticks out in recent memory because, you know, I honestly get I get this like Tom Brady blur in my brain about the Super Bowl sometimes. So
because if he's not if he didn't win it, he was either in it or he either won it or it was in it. It seems like, you know, when against the Giants or the Eagles or Hawks or whatever, it seems like he's always in it, even if he doesn't.
Right. Well, he's got He's got seven rings and they lost what, two?
Yeah.
So he was in. He was in nine Super Bowls. That's insane.
And the only person that beat him is Eli Manning.
That's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
That's crazy.
It's pretty absurd.
So yeah, well.
And that's why he's the greatest of all time. Just
objective. I mean, there's nothing like a seventh round can't be mobile quarterback becoming the greatest of all time.
He proved throughout his career he certainly cannot be mobile. That is a fact.
Right, but all he does is win. So
that's all that matters.
Exactly, exactly. So we'll, it was definitely an entertaining weekend. They also announced their the Hall of Famers for the NFL get announced the night before. Nothing's particularly earth shattering.
I don't even remember who it was
with the Hall of Famers there. I remember one of my favorites as a kid, linebacker from the Saints, Sam Mills, made it.
The community was very upset. Zach Thomas is not yet a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, it seems ridiculous to me.
I would agree with that. He seems to be warranted of being a Hall of Famer.
I mean, he played the same position as Sam Mills, and Sam Mills made it. And I love Sam Mills, but Zach Thomas was better.
Exactly.
I mean, I'm not saying Sam Mills doesn't belong also.
No, they both do, right?
Yeah, but so there's always been stuff like that. The NFL Hall of Fame sometimes is really strange because the Pro Football Hall of Fame, I should say, it's called. It took like 15 years for Lynn Swann to make it. They never knew what to do with receivers when passing started getting good. Like Jerry Rice made it automatically. But like it took Art Monk, who had the career receptions record, it took him a bunch of years to get in.
Yeah.
He has a career receptions record. I mean, like, and then you had, I feel like Tim Brown didn't get in on the first try. And there's a guy that played back with Rice and Art Monk and those guys named Henry Ellard that still isn't in the Hall of Fame, which I get it, bubble candidate. But at the same time, the game was so different then. I feel like he's hurt now that passing is so different. But he was just about as good as those other guys. And then James Lofton made it right away. But Andre Reed took a lot of years to make it from the Bills. And I didn't really get that either. I think they both belong, but I didn't get why James Lofton made it like 10 years before Andre Reed. Yeah. So,
and now, especially in Buffalo, there's like a whole, because I used to live in Buffalo, there's this whole like movement. Because every year it seems like obviously Steve Tasker was not the greatest tight end or receiver, or I don't even know what position he played. He didn't do great.
He played receiver. Yeah, he was like the fourth receiver.
Yeah, but he's like one of the best special teams gunners of all time.
Ever.
Yeah, I mean, I think he probably is the best because he sort of took that position and specialized it and made it an impact player. And everybody wants him. He's always like a semifinalist, but he never gets in.
Right.
So everybody's sort of pushing for that.
He's the opposite. On the opposite side of the coin, too, is the former Lion Mel Gray. He was one of the best return specialists ever.
Devin Hester. So
Devin Hester is better. It's Mel Gray was like that. It wasn't quite as electric.
Okay.
Because Devin Hester seemed to just bounce around more like a pinball to do what he did, but Mel Gray would just kind of glide through everybody.
Okay.
But it was the same kind of impact. He was clearly for several years way better than every other return specialist in the league. Devin Hester's not in, is he?
He's allowed to be in yet.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. So I mean, like, I wouldn't have a problem with it. It's a big part of football. And I wouldn't have a problem with Steve Tasker or Mel Gray making it either, because that's such a big deal in the game. And especially, you know, every Super Bowl comes to down to that, you know. I mean, like,
okay, so
Desmond Howard was Super Bowl MVP just because of returns.
This year was the first year Devin Hester was eligible and he did not make it.
Gotcha. I mean, but I wouldn't be surprised if eventually he did. I think that's in baseball they look at analytics and, you know, like the voting – persona has changed a little bit. I can see that happening in the NFL a little bit.
Yeah, I think if Hester gets in, that opens the door for guys like Tasker or others, like exclusively special teamers to, you know.
Right. I mean, you got to be good for a long time, obviously.
Yeah.
But Tasker was good for a really long time, like nearly a decade, and same for Mel Gray. I mean, so it would, Yeah. I mean, that I would have no problem with that, especially with some of the guys that get in now. I mean, the Football Hall of Fame has more people in it. There's more positions, obviously, but it's overall, it seems much easier to get into than the Baseball Hall of Fame. Maybe the Basketball Hall of Fame is just as easy, in air quotes, you know, whatever. But
the Basketball Hall of Fame should be the hardest because there's only five positions.
It should be, but it doesn't really seem to be. I mean, everybody you've ever heard of is pretty much in the Hall of Fame. So
I don't know who is or who isn't in the Hall of Fame. So I wouldn't be surprised.
You know, it's just one of those things with football. So I feel like that would – I feel like they're afraid of it watering down if there's special teams players and stuff. Like, it took until – what was it, like – 5 years ago, Ray Guy.
I vividly remember when Ray Guy, old man, got up to the stage to give his speech.
Right. He's the punter. He's like, he's the best punter in NFL history, and it's not even close.
They have
like, it's not even close. He is so far ahead, and it took him like 30 years to make it. How can you pass over the best player in the history of their position?
I just don't
understand it. And Morton Anderson, it took him 10, 15 years to make it too. And he's the NFL's all-time leading scorer. He's a kicker, obviously, but how can you not have the NFL's all-time leading scorer in?
That's what it just comes down to. Who votes for the Hall? Is it writers? Is it writers who vote for it?
It's a panel. It's a panel. I think there's some writers in it. There might be some. It's kind of like how Jim Cott made it now for the baseball, where there's a mix of writers, broadcasters, Hall of Famers, GMs. I think it might be a bigger panel, a bigger amount of people for the football. I'm not exactly sure, but they have a panel to make the finalists, and then it's a panel vote. It's not like the Football Writers Association of America does not have a vote like they do in baseball.
Okay. At the end of the day, it just probably comes down to what the guys on that panel, guys or girls, like I said, I don't know who makes up the panel. Value most in a position and who kind of makes the biggest impacts on games. And
right.
I assume at this point, you know, the year 2022, not a ton of them were alive to watch Ray Guy play.
Right, for sure. But I mean, the best out of your position ever. And no matter what, even if you want to argue the merits of punting or whatever like that, kicker Morton Anderson was the NFL's all-time leading scorer. What do you need more than he scored the most points ever? Like, that to me just boggled my mind that he not only didn't make it on the first try, but didn't make it for like eight or so tries or however many it was. Like,
how many kickers are even in the Hall of Fame?
I would say there's probably like six or seven.
Is Vinatieri in it yet? Is he allowed to be in it yet? Because he's got to be.
I'm not sure if he's eligible for that yet.
But he will be. I mean, he will be the next kicker in. I mean,
he's got to be. I mean,
he has game-winning Super Bowl kicks.
Right. It's the – oh, no, he – let's see. Now he's the NFL's all-time leading scorer. So he beat Morton Anderson's record.
Yeah.
His career ended in 2021, so he's got a couple of years to wait.
What? It did – oh, my God. That man was kicking for forever. Good God.
Yeah. So
during his first Super Bowl when he kicked against the Rams, he was already in the league for like 3 years.
Right. Yeah.
I mean,
that makes sense why he's the NFL's all-time leading scorer now. So I would say he's not going to have a problem. That's what Morton Anderson didn't have. He was on the Saints most of his career, and they were never in the Super Bowl. Yeah. But Vinatieri, I can't imagine him not making it on the first try because of the iconic Super Bowl winning kicks he has on top of the fact that he's the NFL's all-time leading scorer. Yeah.
And doing it for so long for only two teams, too, at a position where a kicker, if you have one bad week, you're –
right, exactly. So it'll be interesting to see. We don't really have any Lions up for that. I feel like Herman Moore has already like passed the line where he's like got to go to the senior group or whatever.
Oh, okay.
Like if you're on the ballot, you get on the ballot for like 10 or 15 years and then you have to go, like, then you have to wait a few more. And then there's like this senior group and they've get, you know, guys in the like 60s and now the early 70s have started to make it in that group and stuff. So
that's sort of similar to like what happened to Barry Bonds this year in the.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So, so we'll see what happens there, so they just don't have any. Not super surprising though. There's not too many Lions, lined up there. I mean, we got Calvin Johnson last year.
He'll make it eventually.
I mean, Stafford will. I mean, Calvin Johnson made it last year on the first try.
Oh, he did.
And, yeah, and then I'm sure, and Matthew Stafford has punched his ticket with that Super Bowl win. So
that's become like a debate on Twitter in the past 72 hours or however long it's been since the Super Bowl ended. That's become like a pretty healthy debate on whether or not Matthew Stafford's a Hall of Famer or not.
I mean, he's top 10 in the career NFL passing plus a Super Bowl winner. I mean, that's hard to pass.
Did you have an MVP or anything ever?
No.
Yeah. I mean, I have not watched enough NFL, and I certainly haven't watched enough Detroit Lions to say whether or not he is in my lifetime.
I mean, a couple of years ago, he set the NFL record for most comeback wins in a year.
Yeah. I think he has the record for this year, or not the record, but he led the league for this year as well.
Right.
He had like four or five this year.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's getting it done in the fourth quarter. So,
yeah. Especially 95% of the time, you're doing it with guys who should barely be in the NFL.
Right. So, yeah, that'll be interesting to see. I don't know exactly how this works, but I would say any other possible Lion that's eligible is probably in that senior group now until Stafford
goes. Yeah, people that really, pop off to me in my lifetime that played for the Lions, but obviously Calvin Johnson, Matthew Stafford. Reggie Bush played for the Lions for a little bit, didn't he?
Yeah, I don't know if he's there. Yeah, Adrian Peterson did. Adrian Peterson did, but I don't know. He wouldn't.
At this point, where hasn't Adrian Peterson played?
Right. Right. That would be somebody. So it's just
I'm trying to think of other Lions players
I mean, like everybody else was like good but not great. And I'm going back to like Barry Sanders day. You know, obviously Barry Sanders is great, but
Ndamukong Suh's still in the league. I mean, he was really good, but I don't think he's a Hall of Famer ever.
Right. It's
he might be. His still career.
I mean, he's got his numbers will have to be enough that it overlooks his reputation.
Yeah.
Because if he's on the bubble, that reputation is going to hurt the bubble.
Well, that's like the weirdest thing too. Cause like, obviously he has that reputation on the field, but I've heard from everybody I know who've like covered the Bucks or just people I know in like NFL circles say he's like off the field. He's like the nicest guy in the world.
Yeah. I read actually they've done a couple pieces on him when he was with Detroit that he's like the consensus best person going to a children's hospital ever.
Yeah. He's apparently just like a super good guy. And I don't think he's ever had any like issues with like off the field stuff ever that I'm remembering at least.
No, he just stomps some people's faces on the
field. Yeah. I mean on the field, he like, flips.
I know. But I mean, that does work in his favor that he's, he doesn't have any trouble with the law or anything like that. And like
a genuinely good human being when
right. It's just such a weird,
It's weird. It's that stark of a contrast because normally it's like, okay, like you might be a jerk on the field, you might not be like a jerk off the field, but also you're just sort of there. It's rarely like this guy's a total jerk on the field, but like the most genuine nice person.
Right. Yeah. That's usually not how it goes. So, but yeah, we'll see what happens with that. There's just not many Lions to really think of or anything like that. So it's going to be, I wasn't sure Calvin Johnson was going to make it on the first try last year. So I'm glad that he did. I think he deserves it, but he just had a little bit of a shorter career. So you never know, but man, was he dominant. So yeah, we'll see I bet Stafford's the next sniff the Lions fans have at the Hall of Fame. So, great Super Bowl win for him. And and the Rams, very exciting. And it was a big, part of a big week for sports. The Olympics are going on. We've got some okay performances, but also some pretty awesome performances in speed skating, figure skating, snowboarding. We'll kind of recap more of that as the Olympics finish up next week. And
they have been underwhelming. Let's just say that.
Yeah. Underwhelming as a whole. There's been a couple of fantastic moments.
And for team sports, like hockey team, other sports teams, I guess bobsled teams, I guess have been underwhelming as a whole, but individuals have been pretty cool.
Right. So, so make sure that from between Sundays and Wednesday, you're voting for the player of the week, the Holland Sentinel High School player of the week, Isaac Jekyll, the Holland swimmer.
3 weeks in a row,
High School athletes won 3 weeks in a row. So that is a challenge to you other schools out there listening to make sure you're voting for your team's athletes, and hopefully they're having enough you know, good performances to be considered each week on the list. So get out and vote for that. And next week, rivalry week, Zeeland East West basketball, Holland Christian versus Unity Christian, and then versus Hamilton, West Otto versus Rockford, then versus Hudsonville, Holland versus Zeeland West. You got lots of stuff to deal with. This Friday, we'll have the Never Forgotten games, Saugatuck versus Fenville, and the West Ottawa Purple games are Friday as well. So there'll be a lot of basketball, a lot of depth of coverage, and a lot of things going on in the next week and a half or so. So check out HollandCentral.com and, you know, get out to some games before the basketball season's over. For Will, I'm Dan. Have a good week.